Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and welcome to this ninth day of January 2014 edition of Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I, of course, am Bob Kincaid. Almost everybody knows that. But on the odd chance that you're just tuning in, hi. Welcome. We hope you'll enjoy the conversation and the community. Of course, one of the easiest ways to become a part of the community is to run over to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. It's free, it's easy, and there for your access. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. You'll also find there the Windows Media Player Listen Live streaming link. And other streaming alternatives are available for you at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for this program. WhiteRoseSociety.org/Kincaid, K-I-N-C-A-I-D, .html. And we are carried, yes indeed, and we're glad of it, on both the TuneIn radio app and the Stitcher internet radio app for your smart devices. Okay. Let's see, also, of course, there at the Horn homepage, you will find the PayPal button. That's how we keep all of this going. Month after month. And we try to raise $150 per evening. And we wound up, goodness me. I'm trying to remember now. We wound up in a hole last night. So it's more than 150. Oh, yes. $205 is tonight's goal. Thanks to some support toward the end of the program coming in from our good friend Beth in Texas. So that means that we only finished up about, 55 dollars short. So yeah, 10 people $20, 20 people $10, 40 people $5. We can stay even and try to stay out of an early January hole. It is it's as nice in the studio as it has lately been. It's actually 73 degrees in here right now, and has been downright toasty. Through the day outside, we got up into the upper 40s. All of the snow is suddenly gone. The rivers are high and muddy with runoff. And things look like they're going to return to something approaching typical or even warmer than typical for this time of year around here. So this being Thorn in the Side Thursday at all, it's kind of hard to escape at any rate. No, it is hard to avoid the Chris Christie. Damn, amazing how that stuff just works its way into your brain. It's hard to avoid the Chris Christie story especially after today's bit of Theater of the Absurd, a one-man show featuring said New Jersey governor. You have by now, I'm sure, read all the, as many of the sordid details as are available. Everybody on every progressive website is writing something about it. And I see, what? Dick Dynasty, I mean, just, wow, who could ever have imagined that a vengeful, hateful, petty, bullying political thug would engage in political retribution and then turn out to be an absolutely craven POS when he got caught. Regardless, though, you got to figure it was a great, great day in the morning for the likes of Wisconsin governor and Koch brothers' favorite, Scott Walker. Rand Paul is probably giggling for joy. Ted Cruz is, I don't know, doing finger painting with his own poo in absolute ecstasy. Because this is said to be the end of Chris Christie's presidential ambitions, and not only that, Joan Walsh over at Salon? I'm not sure. But Joan Walsh declared that this could be the end of his governorship, too. I remain skeptical. Now, if it had been the case that there had been a Democratic governor in New Jersey who had simply had a conversation with aides about the possibility of engaging in some sleazy political hackery and payback, but nothing was ever done to take a substantial step or in furtherance of that plan, well, the resignation, that governor's resignation would already be on file. It'd be over. It'd be done. But the reason I remain skeptical about this having any impact whatsoever on Chris Christie is because of I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. There's almost no end of the stuff that a Republican can get away with. But there are overtones to this Chris Christie skullduggery story that go beyond the usual Machiavellian, how do you say Machiavelli with a Jersey accent? There was something about Shakespeare's Scottish play that reminded that I went running to when I first read of the Theater of the Absurd piece that Chris Christie put forward this morning. And it's from Act 5, Scene 5. It's that portion of the Scottish play in which the world is kind of falling apart for the anti-hero of the piece. And he says, "I've almost forgot the taste of fears. The time has been my senses would have cooled to hear a night shriek, and my fell of hair would at a dismal treatise rouse and stir as life were in't. I have supped full with horrors. Direness familiar to my slaughterous thoughts cannot once start me." There's an argument to be made. That maybe that's where Chris Christie found himself. He got himself reelected in more or less of a landslide and began to feel like he was impervious. He had bullied and and badgered so many teachers, so many ordinary workaday New Jerseyans, Jerseyites, that he felt like he could just do it forever. He does, after all, come from the same political party that gave us George W. Bush, who once said of Saddam Hussein, "F him, we're taking him out." And then proceeded to get several thousands of American mothers and fathers, children, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, husbands, wives, killed in that effort. F him. Yeah, see, Ron in Raleigh has a similar response to me. What? A Republican lying about his dirty tricks? I'm trying to clutch my pearls as I type. Mendacity, thy name is Republican. P.S. Nothing will happen to Governor Krispy Kreme. It will blow over in a week or so. And it was kind of weird the way it happened that I went to look for that little passage about not being afraid anymore, having committed so many atrocities already, out of the Scottish play. Because then I went and saw something else related to all of this that suddenly humanized this low-rent bit of political chicanery. And that's a newspaper story out of Bergen. The Bergen County Record. The story can be found at northjersey.com. It is authored by Lynn Tott. And it reads as follows. Emergency responders were delayed in attending to four medical situations, including one in which a 91-year-old woman lay unconscious due to traffic gridlock caused by unannounced closures of access lanes to the George Washington Bridge, according to the head of the borough's EMS department. The woman later died, borough records show. In at least two of those instances, emergency response time doubled, noted EMS coordinator Paul Favia, who documented those cases in a September 10th letter to Mayor Mark Sokolich, who is the Democrat in question who earned Chris Christie's ire for not endorsing him. On September 9th, the first day of the traffic paralysis, EMS crews took 7 to 9 minutes to arrive at the scene of a vehicle accident where four people were injured when the response time should have been less than 4 minutes, Mr. Favia explained. It also took EMS 7 minutes to reach an unconscious 91-year-old woman who later died of cardiac arrest at a hospital. Mr. Favia wrote, paramedics were delayed due to heavy traffic on Fort Lee Road and had to meet the ambulance en route to the hospital instead of on the scene. Due to standstill traffic on Route 46 East, the mutual aid ambulance coming from Palisades Park and paramedics coming out of Leonia were also delayed due to the excessive traffic, Mr. Favia wrote. That was in regard to an attempt to respond to an emergency call at a building where an individual was experiencing chest pains. You got that? Of course you do. For nothing more than a little bit of vile political chicanery, a human being who had managed to survive on this planet in New Jersey for 91 years. Came to a sorry, sad, and ignominious end. Because, you see, a Republican will kill, see above, George W. Bush, F. Saddam, we're taking him out. A Republican will kill for nothing more than the achievement of political gain. Or, in this case, not even political gain, just a matter of filthy old gangland-style retribution. I will, at this point in time, remind you that Chris Christie was actually a U.S. attorney in charge of investigating corruption like this. So no matter the fact that he said that he's been sleepless for 2 days, even though he's only known about this for one, never mind the 2 hours of theater of the largely absurd, there's no way this gets cooked up without Chris Christie, who damned well should have known better and did, but did not give a damn because, you know, politics. Oh, brother. Asa with a comment. Bob, the big bully, micromanaging style of governance that Governor Chris Crisco, Asa writes, is known for. I seriously doubt he didn't know what was going on under his thumb. Of course he knew. Of course he knew. And it was when I read the story of the 91-year-old who managed to live 91 years on this planet and wound up getting offed for nothing more than some filthy political childishness. Yeah, I'll show him. Yeah, he ain't gonna endorse me. Yeah. Let's see how you like it when I take the George Washington Bridge down to 1F Lane. Loser. Years and killed by politics. And that's when I realized that I'd been wandering around in the script of the Scottish play for a reason. Because it's only a couple of sentences after, well, Satan, S-E-Y-T-O-N, comes and tells the hero or anti-hero of the Scottish play, "The Queen, my lord, is dead." And that's when he responds, "She should have died hereafter. There would have been a time for such a word. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing." Imagine the challenges, the trials, the triumphs, the joys, the ordinary everyday delights in 91 years on this planet. Imagine the heartbreaks. Imagine the happy news of births, the somber news of deaths that can happen within 91 years. Chris Christie can take solace in the fact that, you know, she was 91. And just like the Scotsman says, she should have died hereafter. There would have been time for such a word. Yeah, she would have died hereafter. I mean, we'd have heard about that sometime or another, right? Yeah, you know what I mean? Bada boom, bada bing. What an amazing intersection of existence. To find that the price paid for gross ambition was paid by a 91-year-old lady in Bergen. Or rather, Fort Lee. And you know what? I'll bet you that there is barely any mention of this whatsoever going forward. But yeah, Chris Christie has such a stunted sense of decency and morality. How do you not know that snarling the busiest bridge in the country and creating long lines of traffic trying to get onto and across that bridge, how do you not know that that might create catastrophe? Because rest assured, even at 91, it was a catastrophe. Those two people having the chest pains and wondering if the EMS was going to get there, that was a catastrophe. In order to believe that Chris Christie had nothing to do with the shenanigans, one has to completely ignore in essence Christie's entire gubernatorial career. Let's see. Former Governor Richard Cody said that the Christie administration had sent him a message when they denied him state trooper protection after he publicly disagreed with Christie. That same day, over at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, a cousin of former Governor Richard Cody was fired. Another of his former aides was removed from the New Jersey Office of Consumer Affairs. Back during a 2010 blizzard, State Senator Sean Keene, a Republican even, said that maybe the governor should have called for a state of emergency a little bit sooner. Well, Christie's staff then banned him from attending a news conference in the guy's home district. Interviewed for a newspaper, one of those Christie aides said, yeah, he got what he deserved. And then there's all there's clip after clip after clip of him verbally abusing and talking about how he despises teachers. And union folk, and so forth. Also working the Scottish Play side of the street, Jim notes, not all the perfumes of Arabia can erase this blemish on the New Jersey governor's hand. Very, 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 very big thanks to Kate. She just took care of yesterday, the remainder of yesterday's shortfall. She says, now we can start with tonight's 155 goal. Tired of hearing you try to do math on the fly. Kate also knows Chris Christie is as absurd as Toronto's Rob Ford. They are pigs, all. Now, Kate, I will get email from people saying that you're going a little rough on the pigs. So, like I said, to me, Chris Christie can fall off the planet for all I care or stay. Except to the extent that his conduct, in some at least small way, led to an ordinary human being who had never done a goddamn thing in the world to Chris Christie getting all dead. And for that alone, he complained about not having had any sleep for the last 2 days, which was, of course, a great big honking load of bull. But I would be fine if he heard nothing but screams in his sleep for the rest of his life. Maybe somebody could show him a picture of the 91-year-old. Put it in a frame for it. Irish Dave, I think you far too well understand the informational dynamics of some of these issues. I don't have to tell you, Bob, he says. The George Washington Bridge problems were done to distract from the anniversary of Benghazi. Therefore, Barack Hussein and hilarity are to blame because 9/11. See how it works? Darlene, observing under the subject line, begs the question, this is what the people of New Jersey elected and re-elected as governor? What is wrong with the people of that state? Sorry, that was two questions. Oh, but see, he was the hero of Superstorm Sandy. He still remains unforgiven for hugging that one. And I don't know, is this kind of behavior the political, this tawdry, cheesy, filthy political retribution, is this just par for the course? Is just how it is? You know, forget about it, Jake, it's Chinatown. I don't know. So, being thorn in the side Thursday, that's our start. It's going to get better or worse, depending on your interpretation of those words, and it's going to get weirder. It took a while. We are moving north to Connecticut at this point. It took a while for the outrage to reach its justifiable fever pitch. But back on November the 19th, the Newtown Patch put up a post, I guess that's a publication up there, requesting that their readers observe the anniversary of the Sandy Hook massacre by engaging in what it described as 26 days of kindness, one day to recognize each of the little first graders whom Adam Lanza shot up beyond recognition. Some of the parents of the victims, you may recall, were able to identify their children only by the clothing they were wearing that they had put on them earlier that day to send them off to first grade. So the Newtown Patch asked for those 26 days of kindness, and Gregory Beck, no relation to the Beckerhead, I don't know, this is par for the course, Gregory Beck, a member of the school board in that community, responded to the 26 days of kindness by saying publicly, in print, "I shall buy my friends who are gun enthusiasts a box of ammunition on days 1 through 26. No, really. By the way, Newtown's city council structure, what have you, is majority Republican. Gregory Beck was elected as a reactionary against it because those Republicans were not deemed weird enough. So today, or yesterday, Tuesday actually, Tuesday, he finally resigned from the school board. Because that's kind of the right thing to do, don't you think? When you want to commemorate the slaughter of 26 first graders by handing out boxes of more bullets, don't you think? Gregory Beck was a member of a Brookfield party. The A Brookfield party said that, well, they didn't ask him to step down. Greg made a Facebook post expressing his frustration at the anti-gun antagonists, not at the people of Newtown. You got it, the people who don't have guns are the antagonists to these weirdos. The people who don't have the guns are the antagonists. Does Greg go an explanation of his post and to own it? You bet, and I will encourage him to do just that. Will I ask him to step down? Not in this lifetime. As far as A. Brookfield party is concerned, we never made any attempts to encourage or discourage him other than to use his own judgment and make his own decision. I wish him all the best. Curiously, Gregory Beck is an emergency services dispatcher. That's almost beyond comment. Yeah. They're a hateful lot. There's no getting around it. Run, Raleigh. Bob, you have to remember that rank-and-file New Jersey Republicans like this kind of bullying behavior. Yeah, it's manly, studly, what? Right. Marty observing, somehow, I doubt that in New Jersey, Chris Christie would be the leper with the most fingers. Not every day you get a leper joke. Meanwhile, out in the wide, wild world of Republican politics, a report that a GOP newspaper, which one, the New York Daily News, has written an op-ed describing the bridge problem and the political chicanery, deadly that it was, Christie's Waterloo, and they have declared him finished for his presidential ambitions. New York Daily News writing, in the best possible light, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie built a top staff of lying thugs who threatened lives and safety to serve his political ends. If not, Christie is a lying thug himself. Christie's presidential ambitions are all but kaput, as he will be lambasted and lampooned as a man of low character and horrible judgment, again viewing him in the most favorable way. If you take him at his word, Christie stands as a hardball-playing governor who horribly misjudged or distorted the character of those around him and compounded the felony by trying to skate by their wrongdoing without full investigation. Take his denials of knowledge with skepticism, and the man is a monster. Yeah, I'm not so sure. Well, and he's still looking for the real traffic study. I expect to see breaking news any moment that O.J. Simpson has been temporarily paroled to help Chris Christie find the real traffic study. Yes. Yes, indeed, Irish Dave. We are all GOP newspapers now, my friend. And if you watch the clip of the governor of New Jersey, and you are of a certain age, and you have a certain memory for political comments that stick around, how could you not hear, and Irish Dave alluded to this, how could you not hear Chris Christie say, I am not a bully, and not immediately hear Richard Nixon saying, I am not a crook? Right. But there's, oh, goodness me, ever so many more thorns for our sides than that. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps each day, right. This story from over at Politicus USA by Sarah Jones. Anytime you hear someone describe himself as a family values Republican, yeah, duck. It turns out that Republican Congressman Bill Young, who has shuffled off this mortal coil, his life a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury and signifying nothing, Bill Young, among other things, was a recipient of the Family and Freedom Award from the Christian Voice. Yeah. It turns out that when he did go to his long home. John of Orange, the present Speaker of the House, said that he talked about what a magnificent family man Bill Young was. Well, as it turns out, he was a family man in more than one way. The story's been a while in arriving, but the Tampa Bay Times reported the story on the fourth day of January. It was this past October 18th when he died at the age of 82. At the funeral, there were lots of photographs showing him with his three sons, one of whom they had adopted, eight grandchildren. Those were his children with his wife, Beverly. On the other hand, there were three more children, seven grandchildren, and five great-grandchildren from his marriage to Marion Ford. When Family Values man Bill Young was caught canoodling, philandering, in flagrante delicto, he wound up with a divorce. And Christian, upstanding, God-fearing, Family Values man Bill Young agreed to pay his wife Marion $2,000 per month for her silence on his philandering. Because, you know, nothing says family values quite like that. Yeah. Oh, there's a ton of this. It goes on and on and on. Since we seem to be, well, with the exception of a little side trip down to Florida for Bill Young, we've been working the Northeast Atlantic region of the country. Let's wander off up to the Granite State and Senator Kelly Ayotte. You might recall she's one of the ones who helped make sure that there will be another Sandy Hook massacre. Because, you know, freedom. Wolverines! Well, she's still out there working, going hammer and tongs at the youngins. This past Tuesday, when the Senate was trying to get unemployment extension passed, Repiglick and Senator Kelly Ayotte proposed an amendment to the legislation that would make sure that undocumented immigrants would be ineligible for the refundable additional child tax credit. She proposed a simple solution for this, namely, and to wit, that the only way you could get the tax credit is with a Social Security number, which necessarily undocumented immigrant parents do not have. In arguing in favor of this bit of vicious conservatism, she complained about people who are claiming a refundable tax credit for children who should not be entitled to it. Many of these children do not even live in the United States or may not even exist. at least in Kelly Ayotte's world. In Kelly Ayotte's world, if you make less than six digits per, you don't exist. The National Council of La Raza has reported that taking away this credit would endanger about $1,800 in a typical family's annual income. And when just eating food is a challenge, that's a big damn deal. It's a lot of ramen. So, just so we understand who we're dealing with here. Irish Dave, you could put an eye out with a refundable tax credit. You'd like to be shocked by this, wouldn't you? I'd like to be amazed that there was even one person in this country as vicious as all that. But we've got half the political class in this country that is more than that vicious. How about this cat? Art Laffer, former Reagan economist. I don't know how one economizes Reagan's, but that's the way he's identified. It was an exchange yesterday over on Radio Rwanda. In which Art Laffer was a panel member. And the topic at hand was the minimum wage, which you might recall every time anyone even thinks about raising it, entire Mormon Tabernacle choirs of right-wingers say, it'll destroy the economy. Oh, it'll be in ashes. Nobody will have a job. We'll all be poor like the poors. Oh, we can't raise the... Yeah. No reason anything should be any different, right? Right. The program was Fox's Happening Now, which I'm proud to say I've never watched.
Both agree on is maybe looking at minimum wage. And Art, you have an idea for minimum wage that you think could encourage hiring, and it involves state government. So what is that plan?
Yeah, well, the minimum wage makes no sense whatsoever to me. I mean, honestly, it's just the Black Teenage Unemployment Act, and this is the very groups that we need to have jobs, not have be put out of work because of a minimum wage. So I'm really very much in favor of, at least for teenagers, getting rid of the minimum wage so we can bring them back into the labor force, get them the skills they need to continue being productive members of our society for years and years.
Yeah, that's great, Art. Now shut up. Did you hear that? The minimum wage is the Black Teenage Unemployment Act. Art Laffer, white courtesy phone. Art Laffer, white courtesy phone. The white phone, Mr. Laffer, please pick up the white phone. They never stop. Oh, my God, they never stop. So the argument is that, if I understand it correctly here, only teenagers of color earn the minimum wage. This is the very group that we need to have jobs. What kind of jobs? Low-paying jobs. Oh, don't worry. They'll explain what they mean. Because it wasn't just Mr. Laffer on this here panel. There was a resident scholar by the name of Michael Strain from the American Enterprise Institute to sort of flesh things out, if you will.
I mean, that's the way I go.
And so that would, what would that look like, Art, be having states lower the minimum wage for certain
sure.
age groups? Is that
I don't think there should be a federal minimum wage. I think individual states, depending on their own politics, should make the minimum wage. A minimum wage of $15 an hour is very different in New Mexico than it is in the middle of New York City. It just makes no sense to have a federal minimum wage, in my view.
What do you think about that, Michael? Because as everyone looks to North Dakota, you probably, if you have a booming business in North Dakota, could pay more than maybe in a state like California, for example. You also have another idea for minimum wage and something that could be done in the policy end. Tell us your thoughts about what Art has to say and what your ideas are.
Well, so I certainly agree with Art that we should lower the minimum wage for teenagers. I also think we should lower the minimum wage for the long-term unemployed. You know, right now, if you're a worker and you apply for a job and you've been unemployed for 7 months, the firm may say, hey, you know, I wonder if there's something about this person. Maybe previous firms have seen something that I'm not seeing. I'm not going to hire them. And the
why do I suspect there's absolutely no empiricism behind that assertion? You get the elitism at work here. On the one hand, you got Mr. Laffer, who economized Reagan's, who says that the minimum wage is something that applies only to teenagers of color. And now Mr. Strain, and he is a Strain, isn't he? Thanks, Marty. Michael Strain? Is he a cousin to Andromeda Strain? Yeah. Jesus, Marty. But no, you know, those people who've been unemployed a long time, why don't we just hire them on the cheap? I mean, now that they've lost everything, they'll work for anything, won't they? I mean, hell, that's actually a central tenet of Milton Friedman, isn't it? Keep the workers terrorized and desperate, and the economy will prosper? I think so.
A reason that a firm might feel that way is because the government says you have to take a $7.25 per hour risk on that worker. So if we lower that down to, say, $4 an hour, then the risk is much less to the firm. Firms are going to be more likely to hire these workers.
Now, and how are these workers going to get to work on $4 an hour? Gracious sakes.
I think if we do that, for workers that are heads of households and that are working full-time, we don't want them living in poverty.
Sure.
So if we're going to lower the minimum wage for those workers, then we need to have some sort of a wage subsidy or an expansion of the earned income tax credit or something to make up the difference.
Yeah, something that'll make up the difference when there's no way to make up the difference. You know, there's nothing like a tax credit in the first part of the year to help you put beans in the pot in October. I think these people live in an oxygen-free atmosphere. These broadcasts may already all be coming from Mars, if you look back to our previous conversation from last night. But when it comes to just plain pig-eyed, mean-spirited, ignorant, well, we all know that Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe is a past master. Oh, my Lord. Again, a matter of the minimum wage. But Inhofe, Bart Kopp calls him Pisquick, doesn't he? Inhofe, being a genius, understands that it's not just African-American teenagers who are ruining America for Americans. No. There's another African-American who's ruining America for Americans. Damn it. Yeah.
Mr. President, it's kind of a little bit humorous to me that we're talking about extending the unemployment benefits in the midst of one of the most intense cold fronts in American history.
Okay, this is going to be a little challenge for us all. How is that funny? I don't hear any of the empty seats behind him laughing. But he says it's humorous, so there's got to be a punchline coming, right?
Oh, one newscaster yesterday who said, if you're under 40, you've not seen this stuff before. And it has to make everyone question as to whether, and I'm going to tie this together, whether global warming was ever real. Now, while I know that the left-wing media is giving me a hard time for talking about my opposition to the administration's global warming policies when it gets cold outside, I think it's important to point out two things. One, that the administration is intentionally ignoring most recent science around global warming. And number two,
by science, he means something that some babbling yahoo who's very well paid at the American Petroleum Institute has said, but never mind.
That the global warming policies costing between $300 and $400 billion a year, along with the rest of the EPA's environmental regulations, are resulting in millions of job losses. Now, we're talking about extending the unemployment, and yet it's really jobs that we need, and the jobs are being robbed from us by the overregulation that's taking place in the Environmental Protection Agency. And of course, the crown jewel of all of those is cap and trade. Now, when I say $300 to $400 billion a year, that is would constitute the largest tax increase in American history.
Of course, and I don't know, maybe nobody told Senator Inhofe, but cap and trade doesn't exist. And yes, there were a lot of problems with cap and trade, not the least of which is it would have created another, another pit on the Wall Street casino runway. You know what I mean? What we need is cap and tax, not cap and trade. But we don't have either. But it still constitutes the largest tax increase in American history, just in case you're wondering.
And it's one, I find it sometimes when you're talking about these large numbers, and I'm sure the chair agrees with this, that it's hard to relate that to everyday people, to your own state, and to how it does affect our families. And so what I do is make a... At the end of each year, I get the total number of families in my state of Oklahoma that file a federal tax in return, and I do the math. In this case, it would cost about $3,000 for each family in my state of Oklahoma to pay this tax, this cap-and-trade tax, supposedly to stop us from having global warming.
No, I'm really not having you on. I'm not funning you. This is not a speech from a couple of years ago. No. This is James Inhofe talking yesterday about the cap and trade scheme that doesn't exist, that doesn't have a chance of existing. No. And of course, I remain a little bit skeptical about his ability to come up with that math at all, because, well, you know, there's only so much math you can do by taking off your shoes.
Well, it's interesting that even people now realize that this would not stop it. Even if we did something within the state of in the country of the United States, it wouldn't affect overall emissions of CO2, and that's what they're talking about. Now, that's what makes global warming debate so important to mention as we debate the extension.
He's going to talk about unemployment extension. Okay.
Of the unemployment benefits. If we want to improve our employment figures, what we need to do is stop the onslaught of environmental regulations that have come out during this Obama presidency. But first, let's talk about the global warming thing.
because that's really all he ever wants to tell you. He's down at the end of the table. It's Thanksgiving. Grandpa Inhofe, will you pass the gravy? Well, as soon as we get done talking about this global warming thing. Sure. You know, they're going to kill all the jobs, the EPA, with their overreaching regulations. Grandpa, really, just the gravy, please. Oh, you don't understand. This is regulations. Somebody get the gravy from Grandpa Inhofe, okay? It's probably superfluous, but I'll mention it anyway. There are people, and a lot of these are good union jobs, all over the country, who have those jobs, from a wide variety of the construction trades, be it sheet metal workers, plumbers and pipe fitters, carpenters, millwrights, electricians, what have you, who have those jobs because they've been busy retrofitting these ancient coal-fired power plants to make them a little less toxic. That is certainly the case down at, for instance, the John Amos plant in the Kanawha Valley here in West Virginia. God forbid. But let's find out what... Grandpa Inhofe, put down the gravy boat and continue.
Is it interesting that we have often seen global warming related to events affected by unseasonable or unusually cold weather? Often this has occurred whenever Al Gore has been involved in an event. Let me give you a couple of examples. In January of 2004...
Is this because Al Gore is unemployed? I don't have a complete understanding of the rules of the Senate, but does nobody have the right to put their hands up and say he said he was going to talk about unemployment, and instead he's off on his weird fixation with Al Gore? No fruit cup, Senator Inhofe. No fruit cup.
Al Gore held a global warming rally in New York City, and it turned out to be what go down as the coldest day in history in New York City. 3 years later, October of 2007, Al Gore gave a big global warming speech at Harvard University, and it coincided with the temperatures that broke Boston's 125-year-old temperature record. In March of 2009, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was snowed out of a global warming rally in Washington, D.C. because of all the snow. Her plane wasn't able to land, and they had to cancel her appearance in the event. A year later, March of 2010, the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee had to cancel a hearing.
Okay, is it just me, or does this guy just sound nuts? And I mean no disrespect to people who suffer from mental illness. I'm not trying to diminish the severity or the gravity of those problems. But this guy's not well. Al Gore? Really? The magic of Al Gore proves... Oh, dear.
Entitled Global Warming Impacts in the United States Due to a Major Snowstorm. I happened to be at that time I was the ranking member of the of that committee, and it was they're all geared up ready to have this big hearing, and they couldn't do it because of the major snowstorm. That was 2010. So this has been going on now every year for going back right now to 2007. Just last year, July of 2013, a cruise liner that was chartered to discuss the impact of global warming planned to sail through the Northwest Passage of the Arctic but got stuck because the passage was full of ice. Now, more of that in a minute. And that same...
You put nothing about unemployment. This must be a filibuster. In a minute, he's going to start reading the telephone book. So like I said, no, it's not just, it's that one in Inhofe's White House that's killing the economy. This is one of those I despair moments. James Inhofe is proof that the United States cannot get well. He thinks that because we have cold weather, that global warming is a hoax. Never mind the fact that while the cold weather, the extremes of the cold weather are happening in one place, there are extremes of heat happening in another. You know, maybe a continent's on fire or something. Somehow or another, that never finds its way into Senator Inhofe's remarks. No, no. Not possible. Can't happen. Yeah, I don't think I've got the stomach for much more of this. And we're past the top of the hour, so we'll take our top of the hour break. But, you know, it takes heroes like James Inhofe to protect us from the comedic stylings of Al Gore. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, Bob, remember the sweet spot in the American psyche, venality, mendacity, pettiness, and just plain meanness. Wow, that could apply to either Inhofe or Chris Christie. So, yeah, a little break coming up. Bless their, weird little hearts. They're just trying to protect us. Wow. So, here we sit, an hour into the program, and $155 to raise to stay out of the hole thus far here on the ninth day of January 2014. Any combination is fine, because Kate doesn't like hearing me do math on the fly. I don't like doing math on the fly. But seriously, either shoot me a note if you want to use the traditional mail address, shoot me a note so I can give a heads up to Boss Man Wayne, or use the PayPal button. Either way is fine. We call what we do here Conversation Radio, because that's what it is. The phone lines are open, 304-658-3333, via Skype, if you prefer that mode of communication. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. If you've never friended up, send me a contact request. I'll approve it, and we'll get rolling. And jump right in. The conversation is fine. We'll be back. Green News Report on the way.
My children, why do we build a wall? Why do we build a wall? We build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. How does the wall keep us free? My children, how does the wall keep us free? How does the wall keep us free? The wall keeps out the enemy. And we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. Who do we call the enemy? My children. children, who do we call the enemy? Who do we call the enemy? The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy. And we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. Because we have and they have not, my children, because they want what we have got. Because we have and they have not, because they want what we have got. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps all the enemy. And we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. What do we have that they should want? My children, what do we have that they should want? What do we have that they should want? We have a wall to work upon. We have work and they have none. And our work is never done. My children, and the war is never won. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy. And we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. We build a wall to keep us.
It's Thursday, January 9, 2014.
Suddenly, clean tech was a dirty word.
Suddenly, so was 60 Minutes. Inside the 60 Minutes hit piece on America's clean energy industry. By the way, don't tell CBS News, but clean energy is booming. Plus,
a lack of rain has now qualified California for severe drought status.
Record drought in California with no end in sight.
All of those records and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Looks to me like we're looking at global cooling. Forget this, global warming. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, your opinion. That's your opinion. It means nothing.
Couldn't have said it better myself. This is your Green News Report.
Yeah, based on its flavor, I think lead paint is good to drink. That's my opinion.
Okay, Desi Doyen, it's just your opinion. That seems to be what suffices for news, somebody's opinion. And while we expect that from the right-wing loons, we don't really expect that from CBS News and 60 Minutes. But I guess maybe now that's what we should start expecting.
I know. A very strange, very bizarre report from 60 Minutes. On top of recent reporting failures at the venerable news magazine, including on Benghazi, now this, 60 Minutes aired what is being described as a hit piece on America's clean energy industry with correspondent Leslie Stahl.
The federal government has allocated a total of $150 billion to clean tech through loans, grants, and tax breaks with little to show for it.
The taxpayers have lost a lot of money in the general clean tech area.
60 Minutes only looked at the Department of Energy's loan program intended to boost America's clean energy industry, but strangely, CBS focused only on the 3% of companies that failed and didn't even mention the 97% of companies that succeeded with the loan program.
That bears repeating. 97% of those who received federal loans under this green energy loan program succeeded. 3% have so far failed. That is a better success rate than the private venture capital industry. the government did a better job of picking winners and losers than private investors.
Yeah.
But 60 Minutes didn't mention a word of it.
No. And in a follow-up with Climate Progress, clean tech executive and chemical engineer Robert Rapier, who was interviewed for the 60 Minutes piece, said that CBS edited out everything he said about the successes of clean tech and kept only the negatives. Many energy reporters have also noted CBS News ignored the most important point of data on clean energy, the rapidly falling price of renewables versus the unrelenting rising price of oil. And most importantly, 60 Minutes didn't even mention climate change once, which is the whole point of breaking free from fossil fuels, giving viewers the misleading impression that we actually have a choice on whether to switch to clean energy.
Didn't mention climate change, didn't mention the successes of clean energy, edited out interviewees saying that clean energy was a big success. Kind of sounds like Fox News to me.
Yes, and as you've reported over at bradblog.com, there's a reason for that.
There is a reason for that. As of February 2011, the president of CBS News is a guy by the name of David Rhodes. David Rhodes was formerly the VP of News at Fox News. That's right. The VP of Fox News now runs CBS News. I think that helps to put in context their failure with the Clean Tech Report, Benghazi, and all of the other failures at 60 Minutes, the once great news magazine.
So let's talk about the things that aren't failures, but shh, don't tell CBS News or 60 Minutes. In 2013 alone, the U.S. deployed enough wind energy to power 15 million homes. Last year, wind power broke through in Spain to become Spain's top source of electricity. In Germany, Denmark, and Scotland, renewables now provide over 30% of their electricity every day. Also, don't tell 60 Minutes that the Chinese government just announced it will triple China's current wind energy capacity in 7 years. And solar is booming, too. In the U.S., more rooftop solar was installed in California alone in the last year than in the past 30 years combined.
See, 60 Minutes? You could have just said that.
Meanwhile, the polar vortex and its cold snap have moved on, but drought is here to stay in California. 2013 was California's driest year on record, and there's no relief expected in 2014. Kevin Trenberth, lead scientist at the U.S. National Center for Atmospheric Research, tells NBC,
"This ultimately will increase the risk of wildfires."
And it's not just wildfires. The lack of precipitation is impacting California's multi-billion dollar farming, ranching, and tourism industries. And it's also why some California state lawmakers are pushing Governor Jerry Brown for a moratorium on fracking in the state, because that uses over 4 million gallons of fresh water per well.
For much more on that and all of the other stories we didn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, we've got a new feed on iTunes, so if you haven't subscribed there yet, it's free. Please go to iTunes and subscribe. It's the feed with the picture of the lovely Desi Doyen and the not-so-lovely me. Find us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Is that so hard, 60 Minutes?
Coming up on 19 minutes past the hour, on the way to the halfway point for this evening's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And yeah, this one's a little bit personal. I mean, okay. There are five counties, and thank you very much to Cindy in the Great Northwest, as well as to Isaac, for passing this on to me. I just got an emergency tweet from Agnes along the same lines, and had actually heard about it earlier today. But five counties, the people who live in five counties of the state of West Virginia, Kanawha, Boone, Jackson, Lincoln, and Putnam, and Kanawha and Putnam are among the most populous counties in this small state. The people in those five counties have been ordered not to drink water, assuming that they're tied into some sort of water system or get their waters from the Elk River. Yeah. It's poison. Don't know how long it's going to stay poison. Gee, Bob, why is it poison? Come on. I'll give you four letters. Come on, everybody. One, two, three. C. First letter is C. O. 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 A. Yeah, coal. A chemical plant produces the chemicals that are used in the cleaning process for coal at prep plants and some other places as well. And they had a big ol', and I do mean big ol', spill today. Guess where it went? Yeah, right in the Elk River. And so, sorry, if you're a West Virginia American Water customer in Boone, Kanawha, Putnam, Lincoln, or Jackson counties, don't drink the water. Oh, also, don't bathe in the water. Oh, and besides not bathing or drinking the water with or drinking the water, don't cook with the water. The only thing you can do is use it for flushing the toilet. Because coal is good for West Virginia's economy. And of course, this has been touched by the goddess of irony. The offending corporation. Yeah, by God, that's Freedom Industries. Oh, really? Really? Freedom Industries. Orwell subsidiary. The AP report out of Charleston notes, Freedom Industries did not immediately respond for comment. Some may have been checking to make sure that their passports were in order. Now, the AP story does not have a remark that I heard earlier today from public radio, West Virginia Public Radio, that said, the company has said that the chemical is completely harmless. Residents have noted a strong odor of licorice in the air. Licorice? Oh, I love licorice. It must have pained our governor, Earl Ray Tomlin, something fierce to declare that state of emergency. Absolutely. Because, well, don't worry, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting is on the job and going hammer and tongs to make sure that cleaned up. Right. There's no let up. Now here, even here where we live, because of the cold snap, I mean, water mains have been bursting all over the place. And that's without the water being poisoned. But if you look on, if you go to Google Earth, for instance, you'll note that the Elk River is not exactly a little creek. It's a big, fairly big river. It flows into the Kanawha River at Charleston. And can have a rather profound impact on people's lives. But I'm sure that nobody at Freedom Industries is even the least bit worried, because fine? What fine? Yeah, Isaac with a trenchant observation. Just think about all the folks in West Virginia who don't read, have internet, or TV, and who don't know about this. Mama, why does the water smell funny? Just take your bath, baby. That's what we said for a lot of years. That's how you wind up with things like cancer clusters. Brush your teeth. Wow. So again, to repeat, if you know anybody in Kanawha, Boone, Jackson, Lincoln, or Putnam counties, reach out to them and tell them that here in the coal-fired, glorious freedom land of West Virginia, don't drink the water. At least not until Governor Earl Ray says you can, and then maybe not even then, because Earl Ray takes a kind of a liberal view of disease. Back when some of the early studies regarding diseases in mountaintop removal communities were first released, he was asked once, never again, by God, never again, what he thought about them. And Earl Ray took a second, and he said, well, every day somebody says something else makes you sick. So I'm sure this is that. I'm sure he only issued the state of emergency after he'd checked in with, you know, the coal industry. Right, Marty, if one cannot drink the water, I wouldn't wash with it either. No, absolutely not. Exactly, Isaac. It must be really, really bad if Earl Ray tells you to not drink the water. I'd say so. Earl Ray, on the other hand, is in Kanawha County. You reckon he's got his own water supply? Let's go to the phones. 304-658-3333 is the number. Jump right in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Sandra.
Hey, Sandra, what's happening?
You know, I just sort of called because I just wanted to alert people to the fact that they've introduced this TPA, also known as a Trade Promotion Authority or Fast Track, and it's called the Bipartisan Congressional Trade Priorities Act of 2014, and it was introduced by Baucus. That asshole. Anyway, this is being introduced to allow Obama to enact those trade agreements. You know, one being the TPP.
I was going to ask. The TPP is part of this.
Yeah, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the like-minded one over in Europe. I forget how that's called, but they're all similar. Anyway, the thing is that, you know, we heard him talking about inequality the other week. I mean, that's the thing about him. It's all chit-chat because this right here is, you know, massive, and I think there's a lot of pushback against it, but they really are trying to push it because they only have maybe the first part of 2014 before everyone loses their mind and start dealing with the election. So there's a small window for him to do this. And, you know, I like how they slip that shit in while this whole Christie stuff is going on.
Yeah, like I said, it's Duck Dynasty 2. And this will suck up all the informational space in the room for a while, won't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hideous. And I would suggest, if people would call the switchboard, I have that number here, if you don't mind.
Yes, go right ahead.
It's area code 202-224-3121, and that's the switchboard, which will send you to whoever your rep is. And the thing you should do is call and say, do not pass this TPA fast track in any form because it takes away congressional powers and gives it over to the executive to pass, to rewrite our laws without Congress involved at all. So, I mean, it's a hideous piece of legislation, and it's all being done so they can pass this TPP, which is another issue. But just this right here is, you know, it would facilitate the enactment of, you know, which would basically be the end of, I'm not being hyperbolic, but it definitely would alter what's left of this experiment that's gone so wrong. It would just make it even worse.
Well, what's amazing, I mean, there's a lot of pushback, isn't there, Sandra, in other countries against this?
Well, yeah, but see, the thing that will make the U.S. hand stronger is if Obama can roll up and say, well, I have fast track, so if we get this done, you know, we can enact it right away, which would put pressure on these other countries to pressure their legislative branches to pass similar type legislation to enact it too for the countries that are in talks. But, you know, I was just looking at one horrible corporation or lobby group for a group of industries coming out. Oh, we're so happy they introduced this one after another. I mean, it's, you know, it's a full court. And this is...
And isn't it curious that they all seem able to get along together when it comes to something like this?
Well, I'm really disturbed by, you know, it's just disgusting. You know, Obama is just, you know, turning out to be just a horrific face for this neoliberal shit, because everyone's kind of confused by his rhetoric and speechifying. But at the end of the day, what he does is, apparently today he kind of told the lawmakers that he met about the NSA to, you know, really don't do anything. That was like the message that they got.
Yeah, I caught a little bit of that. Yeah, there's not just a hell of a lot going to happen, is there?
Right, and now he's, you know, this is a huge part of his legacy, this TPP, and, you know, this legislation here is the first step. If he gets this authority, it's just horrible. I mean, it's just, I don't know how it's going to be stopped. So this is the point where it has to be stopped. Now, thankfully, there's a lot of Congress people who aren't interested in going this route again. So it's not a done deal. But the problem is that everything is so stealth with this. It's in secret. I don't, you know, I'm sure most Americans don't even know about TPP or any of this stuff. So that's the worry, because it's not known.
And the nice thing about what you mentioned about having people call, you would think that would be an argument that would resonate even if somebody's got a Republican member of Congress, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't, you know, it's just a bad deal for people. I mean, these corporations who are coming out, yes, yes, yes. I mean, it all works for them. They're the only ones who know what's in the deal. I mean, you know, the executive branch is forbidding Congress people who get a look at it to even say anything at the risk of going to prison. I mean, what is this? Is this a trade agreement, or what is this? You know, how are you shielding it by using the threat of jail?
Well, I thought treaties were supposed to promote peace, not create conflict. And that seems to be what's at work here, isn't it?
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, if you have to have your people's representatives to remain silent in order for you to get an agreement, and you have a trade negotiator who said in public that, well, no, if the public knew what this was, it wouldn't pass. I mean, that was his explanation for keeping it secret. I mean, hello?
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't an agreement for a national security type arrangement.
No, but it is how a national security state operates, isn't it? I mean, could there be any clearer evidence?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just an outrage, and it's just really disturbing. You know, all his rhetoric about helping working people in any form it just goes down the drain with this sort of, this is just, it's like a sort of global corporate coup. I don't know how else to describe it, because it's so outrageous in what it's doing. I mean, the one thing that I was really disturbed by is not only will it extend patents for medicine and destroy the generic sort of market internationally, but it will prevent some surgical procedures from being utilized now.
What?
So, I mean, it's really, it's like a sort of global enclosure, like on a huge, massive scale. I can't think of any other way of, and I realize maybe people aren't that, they don't have any idea what the hell the enclosure is, but it was something that happened in the 15th century, you know, where people in England, they had access to the forest, because that's where everyone got their livelihood.
Right.
But after 1500, it was closed off by
the crown
power, and it's been, you know, it was reopened, you know, kind of in the more enlightened periods. But to be honest, you know, they passed another law in England that will make almost anything a crime. So you're getting a redo of the enclosures again, in a way. That's happening in England again, which is interesting. I mean, that's a different subject, but it's all the same thing. Private, public, everything is becoming private, and, you know, you're not going to have anywhere to go. You can't even walk down a road.
It's exactly what you were describing. It, and you know, you can take it further. Isn't it, Sandra, more or less the elimination of the notion of a commons?
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, the U.S. has been, afflicted with this whole thing ever since, just since day one. But it's just being really ramped up. And, England is just an interesting study because they are rapidly turning into, I mean, just a police state and a sort of, I don't know what to call it. I mean, I couldn't even believe this particular law that they're enacting. I wonder what sort of soulless cops are going to be enforcing these sort of rules too. So anyway, that's not really the TPP, but it's sort of, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it, because there should be just outrage about it all, but you know, it's not too much so far.
Well, the in the dark part of it is by design, and
well,
do you
yeah.
But where, I know you follow this kind of stuff fairly closely, Sandra, and for instance, News Ninja Gene has been sending me stories about it too. But when you look at the stuff that people are fed on a steady diet on the TV, which is where most people get their news, what are they going to know about this? I mean, it's approaching mathematical zero, isn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, what are they going to get? And I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to watch it. I can't bear it. But I mean, even on NBC News, this whatever nightly news, I bet they just mentioned that, oh, Obama is trying to get trade promotion authority, fast track. But they're not going to give you any sort of insight on what that means again.
And with the Trans-Pacific, how many nations are involved?
13 or 14 with, I mean, it's a kind of agreement that if they get it in place, this is why it's so frightening, that any country can then join. But they have to join as it is. So once it's brought online for the countries that are participating in it, it becomes a model like Bretton Woods or any other regime that.
I haven't heard so much about the European version, but is it largely a carbon copy, just, you know, different ocean?
Well, no, it has some different things going on, and there's a lot of concern about that one because Europe is really anxious about being forced to accept GMOs, and that is like one of the main push going on with trying to get Europe online with this agreement. There's one that Canada and Europe are working on, which, the Canadians are stupid because that agreement will allow for their resources to be privatized by French companies, Spanish companies, you know, water, that kind of stuff. And that's the underlying, track with those agreements between, the Harper government is trying to say it's something else. Like, oh, you know, we can flood the European market with cheese and whatever other sort of meat and whatever other things.
That GMO stuff.
But what is not being talked about is how, on the other end of it, European companies will have a leg up in privatizing and overriding municipal laws for this electricity and water and that kind of stuff. And then you start reading this stuff and you think, you know, what is this? You know, it's absolutely crazy. And these governments that are in power are doing nothing but delivering all of our resources, even so far as our patents of our bodies, and you know, everything is on the table here. So
everything is monetized, everything is capitalized, everything is profitized. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, this is what is this is the sort of end result. So you know, I suggest people just make a phone call because you know, threaten your Congress critter and say, oh no, you know, we don't want this. You know, you better not support it. And like I said, there is a lot of people who aren't interested in abdicating that congressional power now. They didn't like it when Bush did it. And, you know, they're not wanting it for Obama either. So we'll see.
And apparently, I'm looking at a, granted, anything that's printed by Politico becomes suspect, but Orrin Hatch is in on this too?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, it's just the same old people who are just, you know, handmaidens for the kleptocracy, you know, because that's what it is.
Yeah, and the claim here...
They don't represent us.
The bill would aim to address growing concerns about secrecy.
No, it ain't going to do nothing. It still won't come into effect until the agreement has been agreed to. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And once it's agreed to, they can't add any amendments or anything. So all that stuff they're talking about is a bunch of bullshit because the core of trade promotion authority is to force the legislative body to vote up or down on whatever agreement the executive comes up with. So,
well, bless his heart, Richard Trumka over at the AFL-CIO is making the right noises.
And all the other, a few other unions are too, but I was tweeting some statements from the usual, like Boeing, Cisco, some tech lobbies. They're all, oh, yes, this is so good for America, and you know, it's just and the thing is, if we're not engaged, we're gonna get, you know, we're gonna be done over, and it ain't gonna be pretty. When
the thing that bugs me is, I remember when the labor unions tried to warn the country about NAFTA, and lo and behold, there was Bill Clinton, and there were and there was old man Bush, and they were, we got to have this. And how long did it take before we began feeling the real effects of NAFTA as all the textile jobs left and went to places like Mexico and Bangladesh and Kuala Lumpur and whatnot? What kind of turnaround time, Sandra, on the effects of this thing once it goes through, if it goes through?
Who knows? I don't think it's going to be, you know, this it seems to be, if they say it's NAFTA on steroids, well, steroids, you know, I'm assuming that it's going to be happening quite quickly, you know. And the thing is, it's not so much that, boom, oh, everything's going to change. Obviously not. But, for example, say California with their cap and trade, they want to go ahead and expand that or keep it going or tweak it a bit. Next thing they know, they're being sued by who knows what company from Australia, because they're going to lose profit because they can't pollute, and they'll sue us, and we have to pay them. I mean, this is the thing that will happen immediately, is that these corporations will say, no, you can't. If you want to do that law, you got to pay us first. I mean, that's what the whole thing is. It's sort of a protection racket for corporations. If you want to breathe fresh air, you got to pay us first. I don't know how else to describe it, Bob.
Sandra, where do these where do they come from? You know, nothing just sort of springs to life in this country, legislatively or economically. Usually, there's some hateful think tank involved. Who's driving this? I mean, you mentioned the usual suspects, Boeing, Cisco, et cetera.
Well, it's the same. I mean, you know, I think it's just the sort of globalization, the sort of continuation of it. I mean, this kind of is the pinnacle of, you know, what globalization will turn into, except the people aren't involved in this anymore, because sovereignty is being subsumed by the corporation or the multinational.
Well, one thing that fascinates me is that this Politico article says that this will likely rise or fall on the complicity of Republicans, because of the number of Democrats who are opposing it, and they look. The author looks back to the deal that George W. Bush signed with South Korea, Colombia, Panama, and 12 other countries. 66 out of 192 House Democrats voted for the Panama deal. 59 for Korea. 31 for Colombia.
Well, Bush only got fast tracked by one vote.
Yeah.
At that time, which is interesting too. So, I think people are more aware of this now than they were in any sort of previous agreement. And also, they're aware of what the NAFTA hasn't done for us. So, there is a sort of memory now, because we've had 20 years of these FTAs and these other trade agreements. So, I mean, it's not a hopeless situation by no means, but, you know, if people are complacent, you know, it's going to happen. And, you know, it's just, I mean, there's still a chance that it's going to fall apart on the international level, because, like you said, there's issues that other countries have big problems with it, you know.
Well, Darlene's mind is running along the same on the same track as mine, because she just wrote in and said, "I wonder if Alec has a hand in this."
Yeah, well, no, it's the same. I mean, I think it's just the same people who have been, you know, the chambers for it. I'm sure Alec is. You know, Cato is kind of wishy-washy, but they're still on board. The American Enterprise, I mean, all those sort of think tanks are sort of pushing it too. But I'm not too sure who's in Obama's ear, except for the fact that he's a neoliberal. And his sugar mama, that Pritzker woman, is the Commerce Secretary, who was on TV the other day talking about what a good deal TPP is for America. I mean, she's worth a few billion. I mean, it's a good deal for her.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I'm sure the portfolio will just go crazy, won't it?
Right. I mean, so this is a deal for the, you know, we can talk in Occupy. This is a deal for the 1%. This is all for the 1% and the global capitalists who are stateless for all intents and purposes. And, you know, they want to be able to circumvent sovereign control and on and on and on, and this is just a means for that. And the internet is gonna, you know, not be recognizable behind this shit, because there's a SOPA on steroids.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I have read about, is that this thing's got a little bit of nastiness inside it that would make SOPA look almost benign.
No, but it's so bad that you could conceivably be busted for, you know, just making a copy of a document, you know, online. I mean, it's really over the top. So, and at the same time, we have the kind of they're going to be trying to split the baby with the net neutrality. That decision should be coming up at any day now. So the whole bunch of stuff that's people should be paying attention to. But this fast track is, you know, A1. Anyway, so yeah, I just thought I'd call in about that because I was sitting here thinking, OMG.
And, no, I appreciate it.
Well,
I had a question coming in from Isaac via the Twitter. And I lack the vocabulary. He said, ask Sandra if the dimples are going to be part of the TPP.
Oh, no. He was just talking about my damn...
I know.
Good night. You know...
There's no rest.
No.
But you did just get a note from Robert in Australia. He says, the current Australian government is likely to sign the TPP without even reading it. He says, I'm truly concerned about the TPP, and yet no one here seems to know anything about it.
No, and also in Australia, it's unfortunate because when Labor was in, they were stridently against the investor right aspect of the TPP, and Abbott made sure everyone knew that, well, if National gets in, you know, they're not too bothered by that, so... Yes.
Because and that's where a lot of the pushback had come from, or was it New Zealand?
Yeah, it was Australia. They were really concerned about this investor stuff. So that's why I was really disturbed when I heard about the, you know, Abbott coming to power, because that's one thing I remember about what they were flapping about, is that, well, no, they're not too sure if they would be concerned with Labor's concern with the investor rights or not. So... if Australia is on board, major economy there, see?
Yeah.
It's all sort of false.
But the American auto industry is upset about currency issues that they claim will allow Japan to just dump automobiles onto the market.
Yeah, the currency thing is one thing that the Tea Party and all those other buy gold. Those people are concerned about. They don't even know what it is, but anytime someone says currency, you know, they freak out. So that's a bit of a problem for Obama. And it's sick again that Obama is going to have to rely on the Republicans, like you were saying, in order to get this done. And that should tell everybody all they need to know, to me.
And Boehner's already making excuses, according to what I've been reading while we've been talking, saying, well, you know, the president's got to understand that. Yeah, I can deliver some Republicans, but he's going to have to get the Democrats on board.
Who's saying that? Boehner?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, no, I mean, you know, the fact that they're just talking about this in lieu of, by the way, those 1.3 million people who are being tossed into poverty, you know, where's the urgency? You know, there is no urgency for those people. They don't give a F about these people.
No.
And they don't care that the economy is losing $1 billion a week behind that, too. That's the thing that I don't understand, is the lack of just basic economic... I mean, no, it's not a lack of... They don't believe. They don't believe in the multiplier. You know, that's a Keynesian thing, and they don't believe in that. So they don't believe that the UI benefit multiplies within the economy, because they don't believe that that is a part of... our economy. They believe some other kind of economic dogma. So, see, that's, you know, so that's why we're in trouble, and that's why those poor people who need that money to keep from being on the streets are in big trouble too.
And that's why, and that's how you wind up with this, you know, this guy on Fox that I started the program with, saying that the, you know, that we need to reduce the minimum wage to $4 an hour. To benefit the long-term unemployed? I can't intellectually process some of this stuff.
Well, no, you know, they're deadly. The Republicans are now deadly between what they're doing with the Obamacare and keeping millions of people from health care that is right there waiting for them, and letting millions of people not get this sort of a lifeline to survive. So they've jumped the shark to me, because we're talking about people, you know, suffering greatly if not checking out.
See, that's why Sandra, that's why I say that, you know, this, and just because we managed to end the shutdown rather pathetically, I still say that there's an insurgency in this country, because believe in it or not, the multiplier is real, and if you don't provide some sort of relief, you're working toward a really, really vicious crisis situation. And I personally, and here's that word believe again, Sandra, but I personally believe they want it to happen.
Well, yeah, no, it's part of their, that's their sort of radical ideology, because here's another thing that, you know, people don't really sort of cotton on to, but they need to. We've had a rural sort of urban policy for 50 years. That's called the Farm Bill. You kind of combine the needs of the farmers with the urban needs, which translates into sort of the SNAP program. They've managed to decouple the first time in 50 years that food stamps are separated from the larger farm bill. What that means, and what we're seeing, is they're just chop, chop, chopping at the edge of it. The food stamps are going to be, they're isolated on their own now. If they're not associated with the Farm Bill, that program is going to be annihilated, and this is what's happening.
Well, consider that Louis Gohmert said on the floor of the House last night, because he took to the floor of the House since it was the 8th day of January to excoriate the war on poverty. And he took to the floor last night and he said, if it weren't for the policies of this war on poverty declared 50 years ago, it may well be that I would not have ever run for Congress. Because what got me thinking about it first as a state district judge back in Texas was seeing more and more young women, single women, coming before me, single moms charged with welfare fraud. And he said, women had discovered, and this is a quote, that the government will send you a check for every baby you have out of wedlock. One woman had 15 kids, didn't even know where they all were. That was the most part I ever dealt with. And he said, it began to really eat away with me that in the 1960s, the federal government, desiring to help poor moms who were dealing with deadbeat dads, decided, we'll help, we'll give you a check for every child you can have out of wedlock. That's stunning, Sandra. I mean...
Yeah, no, but it's just a bunch of bullshit, though. You know, 15? What is he talking about?
Well, and there's never been a program that pays a woman for having more babies.
Well, no, but it's just, yes, I'm saying it's just, you know, gobbledygook from someone who comes from a state that is forcing a dead woman to carry a 14-week fetus to term.
I know.
You know, I mean, no.
I mean, this is, you know, this is the same guy who's worried that, because, and what got me thinking about him was your comments on the SNAP program. This is a guy who thinks that $3 a day in food stamp benefits allow you to fill up your grocery cart with Alaskan king crab legs.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the problem is that these programs, because the constituency of people who need to eat, isn't a strong enough constituency, because that was an outrageous move that wasn't sort of talked about or acknowledged, but it has turned a program that is used by 48 million Americans, 48 million, into a vulnerable program that is going to be at the mercy of these pigs who want to destroy all programs that are there to help Americans in any form. So, I think that's a huge, you know, bit of radical movement to separate those.
Well, you know, you mentioned the 48 million, Sandra. Consider this: when healthcare was being discussed, they kept bandying. They kept saying, you know, we got to be careful what we're doing here. This is 1/6 of the American economy. Remember? Well, 48 million Americans is roughly 1/7 of the American population. How come it does? How come that 1/7 doesn't get treated with the same degree of concern as 1/6 of the economy does?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, but I just don't understand, you know, the Democrats, once again, are complicit because, you know, that was a horrendous move to allow for that program to be decoupled like that. The reason why it was in the state that it was in was to protect it from just what has happened. I mean, you know, it's just, it's remarkable that, there aren't any jobs in this country, and the government is dismantling the safety net because they decided they needed to bail out the global banks instead. I mean, this is where it all comes from, in case people aren't aware. They made a choice.
Yeah.
And that's what they choose. They chose, and we're all sort of bearing the fallout of this, you know. So, and while these bankers enjoy their bonuses, I mean, you know, there's some real lamppost type anger out there, you know. So I don't know what's coming, but it's so outrageous. But the TPP will definitely take it over the edge.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if this gets a little bit of traction. I follow a lot of different progressive sites and feeds and so forth. And can it overcome the din coming out of New Jersey, Sandra?
Well, that whole thing is, I mean, that's amusing in itself. But the thing is that, are we really supposed to believe that some asshole like that doesn't know what the hell is going on in his office, please? I'm like, no, fool. You know, you were sleeping. You said you lost 2 nights of sleep, but I thought you just found out about it yesterday. I mean, the dude didn't know, was just lying. And this dude is talking about, I take the fist, the one that was... Yeah, you know, it's a mess. But to me, you know, I don't care. I don't think that he's going to be a good candidate for them. I think he kind of fucked up. So.
I love the tweet that I saw that said Christie inadvertently fired the aide who was responsible for ending press conferences.
Oh, my God.
Because he just went on and on. And
yeah. No. It just turned into, about him. But I didn't realize that, people died and all sorts of things happened behind that. I mean, that guy who's talking about the fist, shit, they're gonna charge his ass.
Yeah, and he'll go up the river, and he's not gonna take Chris Christie in his canoe with him.
Well, but I think that this has sort of caused a little bit of damage for old nasty Christie. You know, because he's a nasty asshole.
Well, what did John Stewart say last night? You can, with the Christie stuff, you can see Paul Ryan's boner from space.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's good to see his shit revealed, though, you know, for the mean, horrible asshole that he is.
What's surprising, though, is that it wasn't revealed before then. I mean, how many times did he have to scream at a teacher before you realized that he was a shitheel?
And the thing is, like, I can't believe they voted for him because he did so many horrible things the first go round. So anyway, I don't know these. You know, I'm sort of over trying to understand the leaders that we put in office in this country. So
I guess along those same lines, Sandra, I'm kind of over trying to understand the people who create, the lead story headlines on any given website. You know what I mean? Because I can reel off a half a dozen of them to you right now, and Chris Christie's the lead on every one, and I don't know how damn far you'd have to drill down to get to what we've been talking about.
Oh, I know. I mean, no, that's the, you know, I mean, it had overtaken my, timeline on my, Twitter feed. I was just shaking my head thinking, oh my God, please, this is, you know, I don't give a F about this. This is like New Jersey local politics about some fat ass who wouldn't have won for presidency anyway, because his act don't play down in South Carolina. They don't like that bullshit down there.
They're liable to start to, they're liable to take a pot shot at him and try to secede from him if he gets anywhere near him.
Exactly. I know that's a shame, Bob, but I agree with you. You know, I ain't got nothing to say about that fucking pig. He's horrible. So good riddance to him. But yeah, there's so many other things that are you know, far more important. But yeah, it was kind of amusing looking at him sweating for once. Cause, you know, they had some nasty headlines in the New Jersey press. So I do think that this has hurt him a bit. So.
Well, I hope it, I'd like for Joan Walsh to be right in this to end his governorship. Yeah. Goodbye now.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I think that if you start getting into the loss of life and whatever else that went on with this little retribution story they ran on that town, I mean, it could be. Yeah, I think it.
And I'm sure he's got I'm sure he's got a lieutenant governor who has a lean and hungry look, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All lieutenant governors do.
I mean, well, you know, New Jersey is, I mean, it's kind of hilarious. You know, it always has a, you know, some really scandalous kind of politics in the governor's office. Remember that guy who had to resign because he was doing somebody? And
yeah.
It turns out that him and his wife was doing them. It was like a three-way. So, anyway.
Oh, God, if you didn't laugh, you'd spend all your time crying, Sandra. I understand.
I know it's true, but let me ask you one more thing. Have you been watching the football?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I was so upset that I hate that, you know, I'm from California, but I hate San Francisco. I mean, yuck. And so I'm going to have to pull for the Panthers, I guess.
Cause yeah.
I can't. I don't, you know. Ugh.
Well, I'll be rooting for the Saints up in Seattle.
Oh, yeah. Well, shoot, it's hard to win in Seattle, ain't it?
Well, the Saints have a hard time winning on the road at all. It was a little miracle that they pulled this one off. So.
Yeah, I'm just saying, though, but I know that Seattle plays really well at home.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. But no.
And then who is Herman Munster playing against?
Oh, God.
I mean, I don't know who they're playing. I mean, they had a bye, you know, so Nick could get himself together. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like watching Peyton Manning. You know, I know.
No, there's just something extremely unsettling about the fact that, you know, one good lick and, well.
Yeah.
Right. Who do they play?
That's what I'm saying. I've been trying to figure that out, and I didn't bother looking it up, but.
Yeah, because they host and New England hosts. Does San Diego go to Denver?
Oh yeah, that's right. It's San Diego, and damn it, you got the Hicks together. You got one Hick who married his 12-year-old sweetheart, Philip Rivers.
Yeah,
and then you got Peyton Hick. So
it's the cornbread bowl at Mile High.
Well, San Diego's been doing pretty good, though, but, you know, I don't know. I don't think I can cheer for some sort of cradle snatcher like that.
That's all right. Next year, you're going to get to root for Johnny Manziel somewhere, and I know you're going to love rooting for Rosa Parks, the Rosa Parks of college football.
Oh, my God. You know what? Unbelievable. I didn't even know about that until I was reading, you know, Dave Zirin was so outraged. I thought the article was going to explode. He was so angry writing about it. But, that Manziel is, so he's going into the draft, huh?
Yeah, I'm figuring, you know.
He's going to pick him.
I heard, I guess maybe it was Mel Kiper's analysis, and he said he'll be the fourth pick overall and the third quarterback. He said the first pick of the first round will be Javon Clowney from South Carolina. Remember the guy that put that monstrous hit on the guy from Michigan last year?
No.
And then Kuiper said he'll go behind McCarron and one other, maybe Marcus Mariota. I can't remember the second quarterback. So that means like Cleveland, which is quarterback kiss of death.
And not only that, but they'll fire a motherfucker in a minute, won't they?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, every Monday.
I mean, some places have a revolving door. I think in Cleveland they just took the door off.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a terrible. Well, whatever. Good luck to him. He probably gets smashed.
Yeah, enjoy screaming at the coach in Cleveland. They'll love that.
Oh, God. You know, whatever. I don't care. He's completely uninteresting to me. I don't.
Well, see, I've had an ongoing back and forth with Brandon from Brooklyn on this. He thinks he's going to make an immediate contender out of whoever drafts him. I think he's Tim Tebow part two.
Well, see, there is. I mean, and not only that, but if he doesn't have any protection, I don't care how good he is. He's going to be by the middle of the season. He's going to be fucking messed up.
Oh, yeah. Well, he tries that running up and jumping into the middle of a
fight.
Cluster in the middle of a... Some NFL defensive tackle will break him into 150 pieces.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. So, you know, I mean, listen, when I think about that, I think about, remember that Republican Griffin, whatever his name is, from Washington? It's going to be who? Okay?
Yeah.
The way they did that fool.
Oh,
that's what he gets for being a Republican, so...
Is he?
Yes, I just, you know, I'm like, oh my God.
Ooh.
One of them ones, oh, we never talk about color in our family. I'm like, oh no, you are blacker than the fucking night sky, Negro. What you talking about?
We just went and voted Republican and prayed to Jesus.
You know, but anyway,
yeah.
I'm so wrong. You know, I am. I'm being horrible, but he just gets on my nerves. I'm like, and then you a fool because you ran out there and played on a broke knee, and now you may never be right again, you know?
And but Mike Shanahan had a hand in that.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying, but it's sort of like, you know,
yeah.
He could have effed up his whole career.
And, well, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be real interesting.
Yeah.
Marty feels a certain kinship with you. He says, high five to Sandra, a fellow whiner hater in Northern California. Marty's no Niners fan either.
All right. Yeah. I mean, my reason for it is just, I can't understand how come they have so many homophobics on that team and they're in San Francisco, B, you know, they just don't like them, okay? I don't like their coach. The coach gets on my nerves. Ugh, terrible.
Yeah. What?
You know, there's no rational, there's nothing rational with football, right? So I don't have to.
Oh, no. Kind of, no, we've got in bold, we got big, in big capital letters, Go Niners from chat room moderator Sparky in the chat room, so. No.
Okay, that's good, you know, so it's just, so it can just be sort of irrational love and hate, right?
Well, but, you know, how did the Packers screw that up? I mean, the one great positive that they had going for them was the fact that they were playing in, what, 20 below?
Right. I was really confident thinking, oh, that's going to be a good beat down. So I was a bit upset about all that.
Yeah. It'll be, it'll,
you know, next. Yeah, whatever. You know, go, who they got? Cam. Go Cam. Okay?
Yeah, Cam Newton.
Right. Anyway, Bob, listen, I'll let you go. I'm sure.
All right, Sandra, you have a wonderful evening. It was a great conversation, as always.
All right, talk to you soon.
Later. Bye now. What can you say, Sandra? It is 14 minutes past the hour, and... fan mail coming in for Sandra. Greg writing, I love Sandra. She always has something intelligent and insightful to say. And then Greg adds, one, when you control the currency, you control the government, the Federal Reserve. Two, when you control the media, you control its people, Telecommunications Act of 1995. This in turn will control the overall health care of this country. When our people are broke, uninformed, and sick, Bob, game over. And Sandra's comment regarding the internet is spot on. Guard what you read. Yeah. GK in Minnesota says, with the inevitable signing of Fast Track, I hope not, people better learn to can their food and save seed for the subsequent years that follow, because thanks to the Terminator food seed developed by Monsanto and other big ag companies, woe is us. You know where this is going. Yeah. Soylent Green is us, without a doubt. And before I go back to the phones, line's open, by the way, 304-658-3333. An update to the water story out of West Virginia. I almost wish I'd brought this up with Sandra, because she would have gotten the irony of this. The chemical has been named, and it turns out to be toxic and possibly fatal to human beings who consume it. And there is a ton of it in the Elk River. The best coverage coming from the Charleston Gazette, 5 counties warned not to use water. That's wvgazette.com. Rachel Melinda has the story. She notes that residents swarmed grocery stores, convenience stores, and anywhere else with bottled water on Thursday evening. Shelves were quickly depleted. And then this is the real Lulu buried in the middle of the story. State and water company officials did not give an estimate on when the water might be safe to drink or use. Then the quote from Earl Ray, our governor, who says, every day somebody says something else makes you sick. The state of emergency will be in place until we are cleared by the Department of Health and Human Resources, DEP, and the company say that the water is safe, Tomlin said. You got that? We're waiting for the company to say that the water is safe. And by company, we mean the company. Which company? West Virginia American Water? Or Freedom Industries? Not clear. But here's how bad it is. Okay, Charleston is the largest city in West Virginia. It's a little pimple and nothing in most any other state. But the Department of Health and Human Resources, through Health Officer Dr. Rahul Gupta of the Kanawha Charleston Health Department, has said that restaurants, bars, daycare centers, and other businesses with a health permit in Kanawha and Putnam counties would be sent a message to cease operations immediately. Here's a hint. If some Sparkle Pony Sparkle solution that's absolutely benign gets into the water, that doesn't happen. Gupta said there are about 1,200 health department permits issued in Kanawha County and about 300 in Putnam County. So that's 1,500 businesses that have basically been crippled by Freedom Industries. Or do we have to do it this way? Freedom Industries. Lord God. And people are still trying to figure out exactly what the chemical is and what it does to human beings, because Earl Ray, somebody says something makes you sick every day, Tomlin didn't really put that kind of stuff out there. But yeah, it's any water supplied by West Virginia American Water in Kanawha, Putnam, Boone, Jackson, and Lincoln counties. It cannot be used for washing, not for drinking, not for bathing, because it can go through your skin. As many as 100,000 people are affected. This includes hospitals. Because, you know, them regulations that keeps coal support industries from dumping pies in the water, them's job-killing regulations. Of course, they're only taking this out of an abundance of caution, according to West Virginia American Water President Jeff McIntyre. Dr. Raul Gupta said there is very limited information on this particular chemical. How about that? So I scrolled down into the comments. Anybody wanting to do a little research on this, it is CAS number. Anybody out there fool with chemicals and know what any of these what these things mean? It is CAS number 34885-03-5. And is extremely toxic. Well, if you're going to use it to clean coal, you can't. You got to. I mean, it was easy to clean coal. You just spray it off with water. Never mind. It is apparently kin to methyl cyclohexane. So, you know, you want to do a little homework? I'd appreciate the information. Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you, Aggie. BK, repeat CAS number, please. All right. CAS number 34885-03-5. 34885-03-5. Okay, here's another reference. All strung together like a URL. Chemical product property underscore capital E capital N underscore CB84855037.htm. I have a sneaking suspicion we will have an answer here. 4-methyl-1-cyclohexane-methanol. I'm guessing that can't be good for you. You don't want that in your soup or your bath water. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. You've certainly gone the entire limit tonight. I will applaud you for that.
Well, I appreciate it, Jim. I didn't set out to do that, but that's just the way it works.
You know, it's good that you did. And, you know, I haven't even thought about the enclosure movement until Sandra mentioned it. Since, my God, I was a junior in college, and we discussed that whole thing that started in the 15th century and went on through God only knows when, the enclosure movement and what it did to the peasants and the destruction of their arable lands, not destruction, but the taking away of their arable lands.
Wasn't that a big reason for a great deal of immigration to the New World when that opened up?
Possibly, yeah. Of course it had to be. I mean, even Sir Thomas More in Utopia decried against that, saying it was destructive to the entire body politic and the humanity of England. That was one of the things he put forth in Utopia. And I'm sure when Henry VIII turned on him, he referred back to that as a reason to make him a head shorter.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's for sure. I remember that very fact because you know my affection for this gentleman.
Now, what I think is sort of contained within what Sandra was talking about and the analogy she was drawing is the fact that the capitalism has run to such extremes, Jim.
It's run amok.
That it is now consuming itself because there's nothing left to consume. So it's got to consume the roads. It's got to consume the public spaces. It's got to consume the commons as they are constituted by the tax structure. I mean, this is like what happens in a starvation situation. The body begins to consume itself, does it not?
Yeah, it does, exactly. But when the body politic begins to consume itself, there are those people who are going to react against it, and they're going to create a situation in which, well, I'm afraid the people who started it didn't really envision what it would mean.
There are some people who just want to do it. I mean, there are people who consider themselves privileged. I mean, this is a privilege issue, isn't it, Jim?
I guess so. I consider myself to a certain degree an owner of privilege because of merit and because of what I've earned and what I've tried to do through various things, but not privileged to the point of hurting another human being.
It is privilege
to a point of, you know, at least you can go to bed at night and say, I have tried to do something to make this place a better world in which I found it. Yeah, to me, that's a real, real obligation of privilege.
Yeah, but when I say privilege, I'm talking about things like white privilege, male privilege, Euro privilege, the kinds of things that people don't think about but merely take for granted. And in this case, the people who will benefit from the TPP, or Trans-Pacific Partnership, and then the European version is the TTIP. That's the Atlantic, Transatlantic International Trade Partnership, or some such. It takes in 28 European countries. And what I'm getting at in terms of privilege is the notion that the people who will benefit from this are people who are so high above the average American or European or Asian that they can't see us, Jim. They just assume that the world is their oyster, that the planet turns on its axis for them.
Mm-hmm. Bob, there are a lot of people out there like that. And as long as they feel like they have some type of buffer or some type of social privilege or economic advantage, they're going to view those people upon whom they look down as being non-entities.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a serf situation. Non-people.
Well, that's exactly what Sir Thomas More was talking about in Utopia.
Yeah.
You know, it was a repudiation of, you know, allowing people to live, to grow crops, to graze their animals, and to grow wealthy and prosper, and, you know, basically enhance, if you want to be selfish about it, the revenues to the crown. But basically what they did, they took the land and all the stuff that, the, you know, the peasants had, and they gave it back to the owners. And the owners, of course, had total, complete, and control. And if you were found in contravention of any law that they promulgated about that, you could be hanged for poaching or for stealing whatever. I mean, it was a complete, total, atavistic movement, and I don't know how in the hell, I can certainly understand how in the hell it happened under Henry VIII, God Almighty, but under the Tudor, or Henry VII. Now, by God, if any man in history had a man who taught him vices, Henry VIII's father was one of them.
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, God. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, and it came down through, I mean, there were wars fought over this stuff in England. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, the history of it is horrible. And what's happening in Great Britain today, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's just incredible how things are going against so many things in which they tried to establish, in earlier decades. I don't know.
And you know, just to, not to change the subject, but to expand upon it. When we care more about a corporation than we do about the people who live in an area, that's an erosion of the commons as well. I'm sitting here looking at what's happened in the Elk River here, and I'm reading paragraphs, trying to read whatever I can find. I'm reading paragraphs that are just really boggling my mind. For instance, here's a line that's a lot of fun. Boiling water will not get rid of the chemical.
No, a lot.
All permit holders have been, which means daycares, universities, restaurants, and schools have to shut down in two of the most populous counties in West Virginia. If you feel sick, seek medical attention at a local hospital or call poison control. The leaked product is 4-methylcyclohexane.
But have they located the source of this stuff? Or?
Oh, hell yeah. It's Freedom Industries.
I tuned in late. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Okay. No. Yeah, Freedom Industries, who produces this stuff for coal prep purposes. This is one of the toxic chemicals that they use in order to make coal ready for transshipment and then burning in power plants and so forth. Let's see. The West Virginia... And you know, we've gotten into it over the difference between know and believe, Jim. But when I read a sentence like this, I get the, you know, I get a little queasy. West Virginia American Water, which is of course the water company, believes the material is hazardous, but is not lethal in its current form.
In its current form. Well, that's reassuring.
Well, one wonders. You know, and this is kind of a journalism question too, but one wonders, in what forms is it lethal?
Well, I would automatically assume that it's lethal in all of its properties. I mean, I don't understand the use of this chemical. I mean, when they dig coal out of the ground, okay, they dig it out, they put it into a coal car or whatever. I don't know anything about the coal industry.
Well, there's more to it than that, and we can get into it.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't understand.
It gets mixed up with other stuff, you know, other kinds of rock. You've got to get that all separated.
Oh, is that what it is, to purify the coal?
And then you've got to crush the coal, and you've got to make sure that it's absolutely. And so you apply a lot of chemicals to it, and then you take the chemicals and you pump them into a sludge dam over top of an elementary school, for instance.
I see. Like I say, I've never been a devotee of the coal industry, nor have I really explored exactly what's going on with it and with its, you know, procedures as to make it a viable industrial product. I mean, I kind of thought that they just dug coal out of the ground and they put it in a hopper and then they put it into a big truck or a big thing or whatever on the railway and transport it to be burned. I mean, that's how naive I am.
Well, I mean, that's the essence, but there's a few more steps in there. We're talking about, for instance, chat room moderator Lottie just sent me the MSDS listing on it, and it is painfully scant in terms of the data available, and that winds up with, you know, the TV station report that I'm looking at here. Let's see. Dr. Michael Castellani with Marshall University tells WSAZ the chemical is colorless and there is a faint odor. If you bathe with water contaminated by it, it will irritate your skin. It can be a respiratory irritant if you inhale it. And if you drink the water may have a gas taste. Now, how many of us are out there tasting gasoline? I don't know. But that's kind of like saying it'll taste like shit, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, there are a lot of people that I know who really will not drink water coming out of the taps here.
No.
They will not.
And anytime it rains around here, one thing is guaranteed. The water coming out of our tap is going to taste like swimming pool.
Well, that's for sure. My God in heaven. I don't know. I swear to God.
But, I mean, this, Jim, this affects hospitals.
Oh, well, I know that.
I mean, what?
I mean, I certainly know that, and everywhere else. I mean, you know what opinion I have about hospitals around here.
Oh, I know.
They're not worth a shit. I mean, they're not. The people who staff them are just people who, I don't know how they get their jobs doing what they're doing, but I mean, it's something that's endemic to this area of the world. And let's just face it, that's what it is. And these people who are staffing hospitals and who are trying to do quality assurance control over this, that, and the other are basically, you know, labor and management in the same organization. They're not trying to protect the patient or anybody who's going to be cared for there or consuming whatever there. But I don't know. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, with this stuff that went into the river, consider Jug of Punch just posted. Here's the warnings for dealing with it. Personal protection, splash goggles, lab coat, vapor respirator, boots, gloves. Suggested protective clothing might not be sufficient. Consult a specialist before handling this product. Be sure to use an MSHA NIOSH approved respirator or equivalent.
My God, where are you working? In your home or Fort Detrick, Maryland?
Well, that's the whole point. This is what's coming out of people's taps in their homes right now.
My God. Oh, boy.
You know, because freedom.
Freedom, whatever. What are they called?
Wolverines?
I guess that'd be a good name for them. You know, I have just so isolated myself from so many things in my declining years that I just don't really want even to pick up on this stuff because there's not a whole hell of a lot I can do about it, really. I mean, I could call this person or that person who represents us and the Senate and the House and stuff like that and be given a form letter or answered, my phone call be answered by some 18-year-old or 19-year-old staffer who's up there trying to go from one job to another and this, that, and the other. And it doesn't do any good. It doesn't do a damn bit of good. And they won't know what the hell you're talking about in the first place. And they will say, well, you know, I'm going to have to get back to you on that because the person who is responsible for that particular item is unavailable. Have you ever gotten that call?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's just really something. And unless you happen to know somebody in that person's office, and believe you me, those people whom I know and the people who were responsive, say, like 15 years ago, they're rapidly leaving and, you know, they're not there anymore. And normally when I deal with those people in Washington, when I call them and I have them on the speed dial, the main number for the Capitol, and I talk to a number of them, believe me, I do. And when I get that, I said, I want to speak to your chief of staff. And I said, I'm not going to be put off. I don't care where he is, what he's doing, I'll hold. And I asked him, I said, exactly, what is your name? What are your qualifications, and exactly what is your legislative title? And when you start doing that, they will say, well, just a minute. He just came in. That type of thing, you know?
Right, exactly. Oh, by the way, some more information for anybody. And this is the thing. It's like Isaac said, Jim. There are assumptions being made down there that everybody's tuned into the television. A lot of people aren't. That's what becomes frightening. The West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources says symptoms of exposure to this poison include severe burning in the throat, severe eye irritation, nonstop vomiting, trouble breathing, or severe skin irritation such as skin blistering. In other words, Freedom Industries just committed World War One on the Kanawha Valley.
I mean, these are chemical agents that you would use that have the same effect as, you know, chemical nerve agents and things like this. You know, the stuff that soldiers used to have a shot of atropine for.
Right.
I mean, it's just the same type of effect on the human body if what you said is true, and I don't doubt it. But nonetheless, you know, it's just, wow, that's just something. And the thing about it is, what can be done to stop these people from doing this kind of shit?
Well, I mean, there are countries that pay much closer attention to this kind of stuff. For instance, there was a news story today about the truly multilateral international effort to dispose of Syrian chemical weapons. And among other things, the Germans just stepped up today and said, we'll take them and we will go and destroy these toxins in the most environmentally sensitive manner possible. Sound, safe policies and procedures. And while every country will have its shortcomings, some countries take it much more seriously than we do. Because we don't take it seriously.
No, we don't. No, we don't.
You know, I had that sound clip earlier this evening with Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma cracking wise about how the EPA is the real job killer in this country. You know, I'm thinking if you drink a big old guzzle of methyl hexo what's a mahelicane, the job killer is going to be Freedom Industries because you ain't going to work no matter where you work.
You know, I can remember when I worked in D.C., the EPA was sort of like a favorite child of a lot of Republicans. But it ain't no more.
No, it's not.
I mean, it used to be. It used to be, exactly. Because I had a friend of mine who was GM 15 with the EPA, and John and I used to talk about that, and he said, you know, I'm one of the few agencies, or work for one of the few agencies, that has a little bit of favored status as far as the Congress is concerned. I said, even by Republicans? He said, yeah. But I don't think John would tell that to me anymore. And, you know, water quality in Washington, just from my experience, Bob, every 2 weeks there was a water warning on the TV. Do not drink the water. It contains cryptosporidium, or the sheet disease. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Listeriosis. And the kinds of AIDS people used to get when they became, you know, compromised. And when the CDC was trying to deal with it, their only solution as far as, you know, when sheep got it, they killed them. But, I mean, every 2 or 3 weeks there would be a water warning, and you could not drink the tap water. Now, this was back in the 90s. So there are all kinds of ghoulies and ghosties and long-legged beasties as far as their chemical formulae are concerned that can really do you in, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, enough for me. But nonetheless, you know, you have a good evening, and I just wanted to comment. I was absolutely I found remarkable a reference to the enclosure movements and this, that, and the other, and that's the reason I called. That's
well, you never know what's going to pop up on this program, and I think
that's a good thing about it, because it is an open forum, and there's so much good information that's being put out there. And it's something like you don't find on the for-profit media, and I'll let you go at that.
Well, thank you, Jim. You have yourself a good evening.
Same to you, sir.
Bye now. This is getting more and more serious. Three more counties, I just noticed it when Sparky posted it in the chat room, three more counties have been added to the list of counties whose water supplies have been poisoned. It was originally Putnam, Kanawha, Lincoln, Boone. Putnam, Kanawha, Lincoln, Boone, and Jackson counties. Three more counties have been added to the list, and they're upstream. Upstream. And those three counties are Clay, Roan, and now downstream, Logan County. One of those three counties is the county where my grandchildren live. they're on it. Grandbaby's mama is a stickler for things like this. Jesus. Let's go to the phones. It looks like we will round out the evening now. Never mind. Hey, welcome to the program.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Who have I got?
To answer your earlier, in the first hour, aren't we all killed by politics?
Sooner or later, it looks like.
Yeah. I know, it's a terrible thing to say now, but...
Whatever else was on my mind this evening, everything's kind of gone sideways now. I mean, this is... This seems pretty serious.
It is. There's no seams about it. It's bad news.
I mean, you know the lay of the land around here, right?
Yeah.
Everything was kind of downstreamy. But now that, except for kind of Jackson, but now that Roan and Clay are in it, this stuff must just disperse like hell.
Yeah. I haven't been able to find any information on the chemical itself, except for like the blanket precautions for stuff that nobody knows what the hell it is.
Yeah, well, and the same thing's been happening in the chat room too, Devin. Carcinogenic effect, chronic toxic effects. Carcinogenic effects, not available. Mutagenic effects, not available. Tetragenic effects, not available. Developmental toxicity, not available. Maybe you can help a little bit on this. Waggy in the chat room asking, I'm still trying to figure out what it's used for or if it's a waste product. No, it's not a waste product. It is used for cleaning and prepping coal.
So it must be a...
it's a solvent.
Sort of salt. And because there's no way that would be a soap. Not being... not with the molecular structure it has. I mean, you know, C8... H16O. I mean, that's a corrosive.
And it's an aromatic, too, because they talk about how it gives off the scent of licorice.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's not going to go away anytime soon. And I don't know what its interactions are with whether it be iron or terracotta or PVC. I mean, you know, the stuff is in the water lines now, so who knows what it'll do in there.
Well, consider that I heard the first story about this on West Virginia Public Radio in the 4 o'clock hour, I think. And the question, you know, how long did it take to get reported? Because this is West Virginia, where you don't necessarily report stuff until you've been caught at it. And apparently that was what happened because people started noticing the smell, and then they said something's wrong, and Freedom Industries said, oh, oops, that was us.
Well, just from the description with the Gazette, you know, they're saying that, you know, it was a leak in a tank, so, you know, it could have been coming out of there for quite a while and then just...
Well, that must have been a hell of a leak. I mean, are there not sensors on these things?
Sensors?
We don't need no stinking sensors. Never mind. Shouldn't have asked.
I mean, where do you think we are? You know, a sensor here is that guy that you pay minimum wage. You send him down there to tromp around in it and, you know, see how high it comes up on the stick, you know. That's a sensor.
You know what? That is, people need to understand, you're not kidding.
No. Not at all.
The sensor is the person who walks out to the tanks at the Rippy Mart with the long dipstick and a cigarette hanging off her lip at 11 o'clock at night before closing.
Yeah. Well, if you're lucky, it's at 11 o'clock before closing. It, you know, it may be in the middle of the day, and, you know, who knows what that cigarette's going to do, so...
Let's see. More data coming in. Waggy noting in the chat room, flashpoint is 80.2 degrees centigrade, which indicates that it likely degrades and evaporates fairly quickly.
Okay.
But does it do that in water?
Yeah. I mean, that's what you want to know. Is it water soluble, or does it float on top of the water? These are the important things you want to know. Because if it's water soluble, it's not going to go away anytime soon.
Well, I've got a photograph here from the Gazette coverage showing a worker for Freedom Industries. Don't you just love that? Putting boom in the Elk River. But the thing is, looking at the river itself, I can't tell whether the stuff that he's landed on is sort of forming or thawing ice or if it's part of the spill. There's no way of knowing, at least not from the photo.
Well, it's supposed to be transparent. You know, no color, no odor. Yeah, right. I don't even think they put anything serious on the... on the MSDS sheet, they just make something up. But it's not good. I mean, you know, I have friends down there in Charleston.
Yeah.
One down the river. And, you know, I talked to...
Well, and I don't know what your opinion of Governor Earl Ray is. He's never impressed me as being a future member of, or present member of Mensa. What he said in his initial remarks was, nobody really knows how dangerous it could be. However, it is in the system.
Well,
so, this is the part that just does my head in. If we don't know how dangerous it could be, why is that plant sitting next to a river that provides the water for 100,000 people? Is that a ridiculous question to ask?
Well, and it's more than 100,000 people, I mean.
Well, if you add Roan, Clay, and Logan into it, yeah, you just crossed that 100,000 mark.
Yeah. Well, Charleston's bigger than 100,000.
Well, yeah. Well, and remember, it's Kanawha and Putnam.
Yeah. So, you know, once you figure in, you know, Nitro and all the rest of it there, the whole
Chemical Valley,
the whole thing. Oh yeah, hundreds of thousands. You know, and it's real bad.
Well, apparently this is getting a national note. I just got a an email from Jim saying the. Spill is now on the MSN webpage.
Yeah, well, they'll do a little, just enough that they can get away with, and, you know, that'll be the end of that in the national media, because nobody cares about West Virginia.
Yeah, unless you're making a joke about us, right? mean, we're good for a joke.
Well, you know, if we don't laugh, we're going to cry, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I talked to a friend down there in Cross Lanes, and you can't find a bottle of water now.
Damn.
So it's not good.
Well, I'm sitting here in Fayette County, and I'm bordered by Clay, and I'm bordered by Kanawha. I'm just waiting.
You on well or?
No, I'm on city water, as we call it around here, but doesn't do much good because the pipes froze a couple of days ago.
Oh.
So we've got. I do have water stocked in, so that's at least a bonus.
Yeah.
For a day or so. Yeah.
Well,
it's time for me to get out of here, Devin. It's awful good to hear from you. I'm glad you called in. You provide a little bit more needed perspective.
Well, I'm sure we'll be talking more. So.
I hope so. And by the way, if you do, I don't know if you do Skype or not, but you're welcome to join the Horn Malloy Skype chat group that takes place on Friday nights at about midnight.
All right. Well, I'll have to look into that.
All right. Sounds good.
I have Skype before, so.
Okay. Well, have yourself a good night, and again, thanks for dialing in.
All right. Well. Good night and good luck is all I can say about
it. Yeah, I think I'm going to go out and buy some more water.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Yeah. All right, take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. So, yeah, that's the... Wow, this program got kind of sideways, didn't it? Y'all be safe. Be well. And, you know, be glad you're not in West Virginia. Almost heaven, you know. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you, Kate, for being the only person who helped out this evening. It was much help, much needed help indeed. We will start the program tomorrow night trying to raise $300. Friday on the front porch tomorrow, of course. Hope you'll join in. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. If you want to read a little bit about what industrial not-give-a-damn does to a place like West Virginia, go to ACAC.org and read the science about what mountaintop removal has done to our communities. You might have a little more thorough understanding then. Back tomorrow night for Friday on the Front Porch. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.